We're live. White Embargo, episode 23.
23, is that what that stands for?
Pretty sure it does, yeah. Viente 20, Trace 3.
Viente yeah. Trace, yeah, nice. Nice.
Yeah. 23, good number. Track. Concluding February with, wait a minute, today's the 23rd too, isn't it?
No, it is the 24th.
Damn, that sucks. 23rd.
I know, we almost got some weird shit going on there.
We're live. What embargo?
We are live.
Yankee Trace, 23.
There we go. For some reason it was going live on the sickbed too. But yeah, what embargo, episode VNT Trace.
We're here talking about many new things. We have the Habano yes. Festival going on.
Yes.
The Cohiba Robusto Supremos.
Orale.
That beast. And we'll talk about a couple other things because there's been a lot of talk on Cuba, Habanos.
Yes, there's tons of news going on, and we even got a
gosh, tons. So
we got a special surprise at the end, some great news at the end.
Oh yeah, yeah, another great news at the end. But let's begin. Let's talk big ring gauges because we're going to focus on Cohiba, the Robusto Suprema, which was the focus of last year's Limitadas, and a beast at that. 58 ring gauge.
What are you smoking right now?
To be honest with you, I can't even remember. It was without a band, and I lit it up. I'll have to figure it out later on and see what it is. But it's like a Toro. It's not a Magnum 50.
I grabbed a Siglo 6.
Nice.
Figured
classic.
Since we were talking about Cohiba, and there's Cohiba News, that I would grab Siglo 6 to celebrate Cohiba News and Cohiba Show.
Well, it's a great stick, man. It's the great of the Cohibas. But yeah, so last year, biggest ring gauge ever from Cuba Tobacco Habanos, a 58 ring gauge, the Robusto Supremos. You and I just smoked it. Phenomenal. I mean, great Limitada Young, great Cohiba, terrific stick. Wouldn't you agree?
I wouldn't say it's a great Cohiba. I don't think it's a great Cohiba at all. I think it's a crappy Cohiba in that regard.
Well, it's very un-Cohiba.
Yeah, it's not Cohiba at all. So I wouldn't even like consider it a Cohiba, really. To me, it didn't remind me of Cohiba at all.
No, it's not really a Cohiba. It's not even like a Cohiba Maduro 5. It's 15,000 times better than that.
And honestly, I wasn't very impressed with the 1966 either.
No, neither was I. I didn't like that one either. But either way, it's got the Cohiba band on it. What did you think of it?
What's that?
What'd you think of it? Share your thoughts.
My thoughts were the ring gauge completely ruined it from me from beginning to end. And I think in measuring it was even close to 60. I know somebody else said that as well, and then I think Charlie said that in one of our reviews, and then I went and measured one of mine, and I noticed it was pretty close as well.
Yeah, it was good.
And one thing I normally do is I punch large ring gauges, and I do that because I'm so used to smoking Coronas that I like the draw staying in that small, concise opening, I guess, if you will.
Yeah.
I can't stand smoking 60s with a big opening, and if I have to cut a 60, if I actually have to cut it, it ends up being terrible. Because I just don't like the way the draw, I can't stand it, it pisses me off.
You don't want to get overloaded, overwhelmed.
No, and I don't think my palate enjoys it nearly as much. Now, that being said, we were just talking off-camera about an edition of the Limitada from 2007 that I smoked last night, and I still think needs more time. This needed no time at all. And if anything, I think what was very impressive to me was the blend. I thought the blend was very good. Tons of complexity, great flavor, great finish. And for it being an EL, as young as it is, I was amazed at how good it was.
Yeah.
In all honesty. That's what really, really blew my mind. Because big ring gauges, I don't think they do a very good job of blending big ring gauges. And maybe that's just me, but all the big ring gauges I have tend to be blend that I've had from Habanos, which isn't a lot, to be honest, because they don't have a lot, tend to be blended for power, and they don't have very good balance. And this cigar had great balance the whole way through. A lot of people, a lot of the initial feedback I've heard is that they thought it was really strong. And while I thought it was strong in the sense of nicotine, I didn't think it was strong in the sense of body. You know what I mean?
I mean, I thought it definitely had some of those strengths and body and strength. I thought it was full, but I think that's just when you compare it, you know, possibly that comes from the fact that when I compare it with other Cohibas, with regular production Cohibas.
I mean, if I compared it to this, then absolutely. Yeah. But if I compared it to like a Bolivar or a Vegas Urbana or, you know, maybe some Regio, some Partagas, I mean, and all those kinds of things, it didn't seem to be, it didn't blow me away as being like super full. And just real quickly, I want to answer a question. There's a question in the chat box somebody asked. When you punch a big ring gauge, and you, I don't know if you can see it, but I punched the Siglo 6, which I still consider a big ring gauge. They asked if you punch a big ring gauge, if the cigar builds up tar faster. And I will say yes and no is my answer to that question. And from what I've found, the good ones don't. The cigar has draw issues, then it does. And when it does tar it faster, then I cut it, you know, then I give it an official cut and go from there. And I think that, but I kind of have that same issue with any cigar size, really, when it comes to a punch. And there's sometimes when I punch a cigar, and I mean, and honestly, I have this old beat Zycar, you can see it. It's like gold and silver, or gold and gray, and it used to be black. And, dude, I mean, this is all I use unless I have to cut something, and very rarely do I have that issue, to be honest. But when I do, and a lot of times I've had cigars where I'm smoking it and I'm getting a terrible draw, and then I cut it and the draw opens right up.
You know what I've done a couple times is I've double punched it, but you have the punch holes overlap, so it looks like a pair of tits or ass cheeks. That's my way.
The butt cheeks.
Yeah, but if you do it close enough, you can do it in a 60 ring gauge, and that way it's not like overwhelming, but it's also it doesn't get as tight. But that's
well, that's when I smoked specifically when I smoked the EP Carrillo inch, I did triple nipple, bro.
Oh man, boom boom boom.
Yeah, triple nipple with the punch.
Now. We were talking about big ring gauge, and you know we're talking about Habana. I think when we think American market big ring gauge, you know we're thinking 60. But you know for Habanos, I feel like my number's a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. Where would you say a big ring gauge begins for you?
For me, 54.
54.
Yeah.
That's good.
Technically 52. Really, I mean technically 52. But to me, where it becomes an issue is 54. Like a lot of the Sublime size releases that they do, I want to buy them, but I just don't like 54s. So, like the Bolivar, the new Bolivar Liberator, whatever it is, the LCDH release.
I know what you. Big cigar.
It's not that I don't like Sublime size cigars. I do, but unless it's a Rodolfo, I typically am not big on a 54. Or something along the lines like a Beheke 54. Love Beheke 54. But that's it. So it's got to be really, really kill it for me to want to grab a 54.
Yeah. I mean, 54 to me is kind of the cutoff point. I think wide Churchill is the beginning, you know, once you get to that 55 ring gauge. But, you know, if you look at Habanos and, you know, 55 pluses, the only regular productions that they have which are 55s and 56s, which are the bigger, are the Beheke 56 and the Wide Churchill.
Yeah.
So they really just stuck to a lot of limitadas with these bigger ring gauges, and even with regionals and so forth, we're seeing it. So, you know, the question I begin to ask is this their way of slowly introducing larger ring gauges and testing the market before they make a regular production line of ring gauges?
I would say so, and I know one of our viewers, Steve, said something about it on Twitter about it being, you know, U.S.-based, but really the more and more I started paying attention to, look at how many regional 55 ring gauge cigars there are, dude. There's an insane amount. So why would it be... I mean, it seems like it's a trend that they're kind of testing all over the world to see how it does, and I don't think they'd keep doing it if it wasn't working. I mean, we have a Magnum 56 now. The San Juan, the Connoisseur A, Reserva.
The Hoya San Juan, they say, is a 54, but, you know, I've measured it, and that's bigger than a 54. It gets big. I think it's a classic example. And, you know, Habanos even said this year at the festival, in the beginning, that they understand that having the Y Churchill be the Gran Reserva, they are appealing, and they are trying to reach to those big ring gauge smokers.
And for them to invest that kind of capital into a cigar like that really is a big deal, and it's a far cry from, you know, when they did the Monte Four in the early 2000s, 2002, you know.
Completely.
You know, completely. So different. It's crazy because you. I don't know. It kind of blows my mind that they're doing as much as they are, and I seeing it globally in all the different regional releases is really, really what's surprising. I mean, and I know we had talked about this a year ago when we had Coupon. And we discussed all the big ring gauges that were coming out of all the regionals, and then recently one of the articles on our page that got a lot of press was the article that you spoke of all the large ring gauges that were coming out, which were what? Magnum 56, the Reserva, Wide Churchill, what else was there?
Oh, it's the new Hoya, which is like a 9-inch by 55 ring gauge Limitado, which is
just huge. That big, ridiculous thing.
Which, the first question I ask is, you know, A, are they going to put it in a 10-count box or 25-count box, and B, you know, the price on that just for the size alone is going to be astronomical. Of course, I want to smoke it because I'm curious as to how it's going to be. I mean, you make a 9-inch by 55 ring gauge cigar.
That's ridiculous.
It's huge.
That's some stupid crap. I mean, we're going to be seeing those on the secondary market in like 10 years, and they're still going to be available.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Monte A's, like they can't sell Monte A's. What makes you think you're going to be able to sell that? Ridiculous, and it's good that it's just one little reserve and they're doing a short run of it, because otherwise it's just retarded. I remember 2 years ago at IPCPR seeing the big cigar fad really kind of hit its boom in the American market, and there were some retarded cigars that we would see, and all those brands were not there last year.
Yeah,
you know,
but you know there are
specialized.
There are some who are still putting out these big sticks and for the American market, which is just crazy. I don't get it, but it's you know, Habanos has done a pretty good job of keeping it pretty low compared with a lot of other stuff. But you know, the 58 was a big marker.
They let the Americans fail out at first.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to give them credit in that regard. I mean, some people, you could look at it and say that they're behind in the game, or you can look at it and say they've watched the Americans fail. Like, it seemed like the American market kind of settled on a 6x60 as a Grand Tour, or whatever people want to call it.
Yeah.
You know, if you talk to most manufacturers now, you'll see a Robusto, a Toro, a Bellicoso, and a 6x60, whatever they want to call it, Grand Robusto, Grand Toro, Grand whatever the hell they call it.
Yeah.
But 6x60 seemed to have, in the last 3 or 4 years, kind of settled itself as the... If I'm a cigar manufacturer and I'm going to make a big ring gauge just because people are asking for it, I'm going to make a 6x60, and that's the one big ring gauge I'm going to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those... I think the demand's dying down. I think if you talk to a couple of manufacturers and private label owners, they'll say, yeah, demand has died down, and, you know, which is good because it was crazy. You know, with that being said, I think the Robusto Supremos was a smart release. I think, to be honest, I think they did a good job. I think they did a good job with the 58 ring gauge. I mean,
yeah, no, I think they did a better job than most Americans. Large ring gauge,
and
non-Cuban ones are terrible.
So,
I mean, they're, I should say they're one-dimensional and not too complex, you know.
Yeah. It's, yeah, and that's, and I think Cohiba, I think Bonos did a good job with that with the Cohiba.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, man.
And my experience with two others that I've reviewed, or one that I'm upcoming review, in that 55 ring gauge format from Habanos, were very one-dimensional. You know, and so it seemed like Habanos kind of stopped at 55, whereas everybody in America went way over 60 and then came back to 60, and they just kind of went up and up and up and went, okay, 54, 55, we'll stop right here for a while. And then they, of course, and I think you even called it and said like a year or so ago that Cohiba is going to come out with a 60 ring gauge Reserva. And addition to Matata.
You did,
like a year ago. I remember you were saying it. You were all drunk one night on here saying, that's going to happen, blah, blah, blah.
I said it before they did it. So, but yeah, yeah. I mean, right, 2010, I think they stopped. They said, all right, let's just stick with these 54s, 55s, and let's roll with it. And, yeah. I mean, now, Black Churchill, Grand Reserva, which is a big deal for the Romeo brand. It's the first time they've been selected on it. I'm a little surprised that the Y Churchill was picked for the Romeo brand, you know, especially with like a, I don't know, H. Upminster, Romeo Churchill.
Yeah, but when you consider that size, that size, I can't remember what it's called. I mentioned it in an upcoming review, but that size specifically is the size that you're seeing in all the regional releases.
Yeah.
So it seems like they train their torsadors. Okay, we're going to get real good at this wide Churchill size, and now we're going to start popping it out in all these different markets, you know, regionally, and let's see how it does regionally. They did that in 2013. They started popping them out, and then 2014 they started popping them out, and now 2015 there's even more, you know, in that are coming, and I think if anything that kind of shows that they slowly, you know, saw what would happen with the Romeo Wild Churchill, which is a cigar blended for strength, less complexity and dimension, more power and full body, and they did really well with it. And then they started dumping it in different regions, and they're doing well with them. And they continued dumping it in more regions, and now they're taking it one step further with the Wild Churchill Reserva and the EL14 Cohiba. And that Cohiba is... I mean, from what I've heard, they're selling like wildfire.
Yeah.
Right out the gate. Right out
they're,
the gate. They're just selling like crazy.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from, you know, the retailers and who's been getting them. And I mean, you kind of expect it as Cohiba, but at the same time, people are going to be interested in it.
Yeah. So, and I don't think I've heard one person give a bad review on it.
No, I think everyone who smoked it has said really good things about it. What, yeah, did you say Cigar Aficionado reviewed it?
I want to say I haven't read the latest issue yet, but I saw something that said they scored it. I want to say they scored it a 92. They scored that a 92, and then they scored the Boulevard and the Partagas, and I want to say 89 and 90 for the Boulevard and Partagas.
Yeah, those were, yeah. I mean, I put the Cohiba between like 91 and 93, so it's good. I really liked it. As you said, it's not very Cohiba-like. It's very different, but it's a nice change of pace, and it's a beautiful, beautiful cigar.
Yeah, if I was being purely objective and not going by size, which in my review I felt like that's what I tried to convey in my review, and I don't think at any point in time, other than like the last sentence or two, did I say I wouldn't buy this because it's big. You know, I gave my objective tasting notes, finish notes. I mean, the finish was freaking great. Taste was all over the place. Great complexity, great balance, great power. One thing that was really interesting was the power up front, and then the switch to the milder middle, and that kind of signifies a change in the Cuban blending to me, because Cuban blending has always been start mild and progress as you go through the cigar. And I mean, that's just been traditional Cuban blending for a long time. And this was one of the few cigars that I smoked where it was like, boom, it came out with full flavor and power, but it wasn't like overpowering. It didn't burn my palate. There was plenty of balance there. Then it mellowed, and then it picked back up again. And by the end of it, I mean, my head was definitely good and wrecked, you know.
Yeah, it's a journey. It'll take you. It'll definitely take you on a journey. I enjoyed it, and you know, next time we'll be sharing more. I posted my review of the Bolivar, the 14 Limitada. Catfish will be getting to the Partagas, and then we'll probably do a show talking about them and comparing the three and seeing how they are. But you know, moving on from there, the other I think we should continue with kind of talking about this year. Go ahead.
Can I just tag one little last thing on it? I found it very interesting was, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I found it very interesting that I didn't read your review at all before I wrote mine and posted mine, and both of us talked about it being a raisin, having a specifically a raisin sweetness and a raisin note to it. So
it was all over
the place.
Yeah. It's a nice flavor profile, it is. So, I mean, would I buy a box of them? Probably not, but I would visit my local LCDH and you know, get some, put some for future years, which I have, and then, you know, have a couple that, you know, smoke in 6 months, smoke in a year, see how it is.
Exactly.
Not going to go buy a box.
So that being said, you were starting to talk about...
Yeah, moving forward with Habanos Festival, and kind of we can kill a couple birds with this one stone, and you know, the big thing they talked about, and there's two pieces out today. Cigar Aficionado did a piece on, you know, the turnover, the profits, market share of Habanos, and also Charlie from Half Wheel. Charlie put out a good piece as well, talking about Cuba, where it stands, what they're able to do, and going to the American market. Because Habanos made a pretty bold statement at the festival, you know, basically saying, hey, we're waiting for this embargo to be lifted and coming strong in the United States, and they say target, you know, take 25-30% of the market share.
Yeah, and I think that kind of answers a lot of people's questions who had been, you hear a lot of negative sentiment in the boutique market, in the boutique world, of guys that say, oh, it'll be years before they get here anyways, and now they suck, and construction is terrible, and all this bullshit. And it's just because they're trying to sell their own cigars, and I get it.
Oh, yeah.
But to think that these guys haven't been prepared is retarded, in my opinion. 50% of them is owned by Altadis. Altadis puts out cigars all over the world, including the United States. So to think that Altadis, as a business plan, is not going to be prepared for something like this and doesn't have, you know, steps in motion is ridiculous. And can I confirm or deny that? No, I can't. I don't, you know, I'm nobody. I'm not an expert. I never said I am, but that's just what makes sense to me. And so when you hear something like this, where the projection was, I think it was the commercial vice president guy's name was, Mike A. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, but he said 70 to 90 million cigars immediately, 25 to 30%. They're going to come in and take a quarter of the market immediately and sell 70 to 90 million cigars.
Yeah.
And that's a bold statement.
Yeah. It's a very bold statement. The question was asked, well, I mean, someone asked the question, you know, and he answered it, do you think they can do it? Answer was no. And to be honest, I don't think they can do it in the first year. I don't know if they can do it. But my biggest thing was saying they shouldn't do it. And you know, one of the things, my theory and what I've always talked about is almost take a Davidoff-like approach and establish these retailers as making them have huge buy-ins to become appointed Habanos SA merchants in the United States. Mm-hmm. I think that would be the wisest thing they could do.
Or franchising LCDHs.
Exactly. Take a Davidoff approach and have LCDHs in the United States and have those be where it is with. And do what they do, and you know, you can really control the quality that way. But you know, that's a huge market share. I wonder about the tobacco for Cuba and them being able to do what they're doing for the rest of the world.
Well, here's where it gets interesting, because another VP of development said that their long-term goal is to take 70% of the market share, which is where they are worldwide. So they really want to take it over.
Yeah.
And then he basically, the first guy said, Maekeo, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I apologize, sir, if you ever end up watching this, but you probably won't. He made a point that they're not ever going to compromise quality, and that they learned their lesson in 2000 and 99 and 2000, and they that they're not going to go down that road again. And I tend to believe that I think they will. What's interesting, though, is at the end of the CA, in the CA article, that article specifically, they noted that they had some difficult harvests a couple years back, and that was why they were slow to release the new edition limitadas, including the Robusto Supremos from Cohiba.
Yeah.
And I vaguely remember an article with Hiroshi. I want to say in 2012, I remember reading an article on Hiroshi, and he mentioned something like that, like they had had some rough weather that had wiped out some crops. So it kind of makes sense. And so to answer that question, if they were having trouble putting these out now with bad crops, what happens in 3 or 4 years when they need to take over 70% of the U.S. market and they have a bad crop or two? Are they going to be able to sustain it?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's where, you know, I think that's where, to me, it's just, okay, this is probably reaching a little too far. It's one of those things. I don't think there's a problem with them putting out cigars. I don't think Cuba Tobacco has any problem rolling the cigar. I think the issue comes with, and this is, for anyone, this is even the non-Cuban market, is putting out a quality cigar. Because, you know, in my opinion, there's plenty of brand private label owners and manufacturers in Honduras, Nicaragua, and the DR who are putting out a ton of stuff. It doesn't necessarily mean it's good. And, you know, just because it may smoke well doesn't mean that it's actually a good stick. You know, the tobacco can burn, doesn't mean it's good tobacco.
What would be interesting is to you know, if we could talk to, you know, some of the tobacco brokers that are out there worldwide that are brokering Cuban tobacco out of Cuba, like the Mirafales who did the La Estancia, that family apparently sits on, they've got plenty of Cuban tobacco, and there's other companies in the world that are using Cuban tobacco that are buying it from Cuba. So yes. It begs the question that if production numbers like that were their ultimately their goal, would they stop brokering Cuban tobacco to other countries, other brands and whatnot? That's what would be really, really interesting, is to see if they went, okay, we're going to shut down and we're not going to sell our tobacco to anybody else. Because I know a lot of people, when they talk about the embargo getting lifted, they talk about, oh, man, I can't wait to see, you know, guys like Pepin and...
I hate that. That pisses me off.
And all that.
It pisses blend me off with it. So much.
You know? And I don't know. I mean, I think it'd be cool. I'm down for it. But, I think it would be cool to taste some Placentia tobacco blended with it, but it begs the question, what if at that point those guys are like, no, we're not selling any of this to you, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there comes a point of, I mean, Cuban tobacco and, you know, Habanos SA and Imperial Tobacco, they're not idiots. I mean, why are you going to open yourself up just to dissolve Habanos and Cuban tobacco?
Yeah,
you know, I don't think they're in the end. I don't think they have any interest in dissolving themselves. So, you know, the question of selling tobacco and hey, blah blah blah, you know, take this brand, sure, whatever, we don't care. I just think it's kind of silly. That's why I get irritated when people are saying, oh man, I really look forward to smoking some of you know, tobacco from Vegas Robaina with some you know, Esteli Ligero, blah 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 blah. It's like, how are you going to get it?
They're gonna sell them the crap, is what they're gonna do.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the production is there to really sustain it. But I don't know. I mean, that's the thing is, you and I are just consumers talking shit, so we really don't have any idea. You know,
exactly.
Down to it, how much they actually broker out. You know.
Exactly, and I think Cuba Tobacco is the only one who really has an idea, because they look at the numbers, they see how much the tobacco they get, they know what they can roll and so forth, and that's. You know, I think they've done a lot, and they've sacrificed. I don't know if you sacrificed, but they've cut their losses in certain areas to improve quality and to improve the image of Habanos since probably what 2007, 2006, 2008. Mm-hmm. And the fear that I think a lot of a lot of us have is opening up to the United States market and ruining everything they've done. I think that's why people like us then get crazy, oh man, we're just going to go buy a bunch of Cubans before it all opens up.
Before it all goes to hell.
Before it all goes to hell, and then we're like, crap, what do we do?
I think I'll be all right for a little while.
Yeah, that's the plan, at least for myself, and I know some others. But, you know, other than that, you know, they talked about their revenue and, you know, what their turnover, and it's pretty similar to last year. It's a little bit less, but they have 70% of the market share, which it isn't surprising with a lot of other brands going overseas, trying to get into those international markets, just because, look at the United States right now. It doesn't look like it's the most friendly tobacco nation out there. So, I mean, you're not going to be able to sell these cigars in the United States. Might as well try and go sell elsewhere to get it.
But we sell the most. So reality is, I mean, if you talk to, you know, somebody like Akil, for example, you know, and he was big in Europe, and he didn't come to the States to sell as many cigars as he sells in Europe. He came to the States to sell like 30, 40, 50 times as many cigars.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is so much more. The market in the States is huge.
Yeah.
So, but the reality is we're talking about, you know, non-Cuban cigars being sold in the rest of the world, which is a very, very, they have a very small market share. I mean, if we take that number for truth, then that means that 30% of the world's cigar sales outside of the States, or 30% of the international market, is non-Cuban. So then when you take that and you pare it down to, you take Davidoff out of that, which I'm sure is a huge part of that.
You take Davidoff out of the 30%, and I would be very interested to see where everyone else is, because I guarantee it's a very small number.
Yeah, you probably, Rocky sells some cigars internationally, AJ does, you
Perdomo
know, some companies out there, exactly. There are some out there that do, but really, I mean, the boutique industry isn't doing it.
Yeah, you know, no, the boutique
they don't have the capital to get out there.
No, they're struggling to get into humidors in their own damn state, so what the hell are they trying to do going international?
Exactly.
So, well, yeah, so it's one of those, the festival's going on, and, you know, I think overall there's a lot of excitement. I think Habanos does a good job of releasing product and getting people really excited about it. You know, they're still pushing the Añados, the Monte Cristo and Romeo, making a big deal about those. We talked about it. We haven't gotten to them yet, but it's in the queue.
The Romeos are in the queue. Monty's apparently are taking a while to hit the market a little bit.
Yeah, Monty's are MIA right now.
There's some places that have them, and they're holding on to them like gold.
Yeah, and there's other places that are still not getting them. So, but you know, the overall Romeos, I've heard some mixed things. I've heard some positive things as well as those. So.
I've heard mixed on both, really. So it just kind of depends. I mean, who knows what the reality is. I'd be interested to try it and see and do a show on it, because it'll give some perspective. Given the price of it, I mean, the price is pretty ridiculous. You know.
The price is high on them. So it's just.
And it's cool. I mean, yeah.
You got to do what you got to do. You got to make money. You got to make some money.
Exactly. And I think it was a good idea from them. Probably something that, like I said, last time we talked about it, so an idea that they stored away for years and decided to go, okay, let's see how this does. Let's see if it sells. And if the consumers are like, nah, whatever, then fine. Then they only risked, you know, two releases. They only released in two different sizes, and that's it. You know?
Yeah.
And who knows, maybe somewhere down the line they turn out to be gems. Who knows?
Gems. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just interesting because, you know, there's no numbers, and these are all rolled in 05, but there's no numbers with it, and that's just where I get confused of, you know, how many of these do you have? And, you know, Habanos never really tells you how many they have. Mm-hmm. They kind of just, I think, do what they can do, and then they're like, okay, we're done, and then they're like, what was that total number again? Oh, I lost track. I don't know.
Yeah, seriously.
They're just like, yeah, we should put it out.
I mean, they do tend to say on their regionals and LEs how many boxes they're going to put out, and I bet they're full of crap.
The reservas, the grand reservas, the regionals. But
my guess is the original box of Supremos I have will be worth some money someday, because they'll probably sell out like crazy, and then the next release people will say, oh, it's not as good as the first release. You know, all that jazz. You know how that goes with.
Oh yeah, I mean it'll be the original. Everyone always loved the original releases. So
yeah,
but it's just, you know, I mean, anything, you have a Cohiba Limitada, I don't care what it is, in a couple years plus, it's gonna be worth a fortune.
Exactly.
That's how it is. It's like the Bahique's I have from 2010. You know, the amount people have been willing to pay for them has been astronomical. So,
what box code do you have? What month?
I have just a 52. It's just a 10 count box.
I know. What month?
I'd have to freaking go look at it. It was the original. I can't remember. You want me to go to my humidor and look for it one day and give it to you?
No, I have some. I just smoked a 2010 from August.
How is it?
And it's fantastic and something totally knocked me on my rear. You know, it doesn't knock me out. It just gives me a great, like, mellow buzz. We had a Bahique day at my buddy's cigar club, and we all sat down and had Bahique 54s for lunch. And I smoked a 2010. I hadn't even smoked one of these boxes yet. I got a few boxes of August 2010, and seeing some of the prices that those things are going for, $600 to $700 a box, is unbelievable.
Yeah. It's, you know. I mean, it's high, and you know, it's. I haven't smoked a recent release of them, and I'm actually curious to smoke one and see how they are.
Latest I've smoked is a 2012, and it was fantastic, honestly. Nice. I mean, I smoked several 2012s from a box, and I thought they were great. I mean, I smoked 2011s and 2012s, so I thought they were great. I smoked a 2010, I thought it was great. And I know everybody always likes to say the older ones are better. And I'm not going to disagree with that statement, because this was fantastic. But, you know, I do think that age obviously plays a role in specifically with Medio Tempo. And
oh, yeah.
It's funny, because right after we smoked those, the guys that I was with smoked a couple of the Carlos Fernando's Medio Tempos that we had. And I didn't. I smoked something else. I smoked a Nicaraguan 1502. But they were like, man, these are so much better now. You know, they're almost a year old. And they've changed so much, and I'm like, yeah, well, you know, that Medio, my experience with Medio, be it from Casa Fernandez or from Cuba, is it takes a lot of time to balance, and then once it starts to begin that balance, and it starts to mellow out, the complexity just comes alive, you know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because Casa Fernandez, when they first made a big deal about the Medio Tempo with their Miami Reservas, back in 11, I have 2011, whenever they're smoking great now. When they're young, they're strong as hell. But they really mellowed out a little bit and really come together, and it made a better smoking experience overall. So what else were we going to talk about?
The recent other more Cuba news is General Tobacco.
Oh yeah,
got shut down. They got pimp slapped by the Supreme Court.
Well, it's a very interesting question, because you know it's.
Well, let's tell everybody why, for those of you that don't know.
Yeah, you know more about the article than I do, so why don't you?
Well, Altadis in general own a ton of the Cuban namesakes. Altadis owns Monte Cristo and Romeo and Juliet, I think, and a couple others. I don't know exactly which ones, but General owns Cohiba, and they've been, you know, trying to take Cuba tobacco to trademark, basically sue them over the trademark for years in the U.S. Supreme Court, and just recently, like 2 days ago, the Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to hear this. So it's a victory in a sense for Cuba tobacco in getting able to keep the Cohiba name, even though General is still operating under it. So it begs the question, what's going to happen if and when the embargo lifts and Cuba tobacco says, you know, we've had this name longer than you have. Which, you know, who knows what the hell's going to happen at that point. But that's when it's obviously, it's going to have to go to court at that point. It's going to have to.
I mean, it definitely will. My natural reaction is, okay, looking at it from the perspective, Cohiba was founded by Cuba. I mean, it's Cuban.
Mm-hmm.
For Castro. That was the original intention of it. It was for the government to give out to, you know, foreign diplomats. So with that in mind, you know, my initial reaction would be, okay, you know, that obviously it's theirs. They have the right to it. But who knows? I mean, who knows what
market. But the general's been selling under that name for so freaking long.
Yeah.
That it's great. It makes you wonder if some kind of international trademark case is going to go down and then diplomacy plays a role. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, somebody up above says, hey, sorry guys, we're going to go ahead and let them roll with this because we just lifted the embargo and we want to help their country out and those kinds of things. You know what I mean? Obviously, I think they have a legitimate stake. And I don't, you can't blame them for doing what they did. But it's like, how do we... Like, do they call themselves Cohiba Nicaragua and Cohiba Dominican? It's kind of like the Angels, you know, and I'm a huge Angels fan. I've always been an Angels fan since I was a kid, and they were, you know, the California Angels and the Anaheim Angels, and now they're the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Like, is that going to happen to Cohiba, for Generals Cohiba? Like,
Are they the LA Angels of Anaheim?
Yeah, because they wanted to call themselves the LA Angels, and they got pissed off, and the LA Dodgers got pissed off. They're like, you're in Anaheim, so their official name is the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, or something like that. It's ridiculous. It's hilarious. So
it would be very interesting to see. Yeah, I mean, it'd be very interesting to see what happens, and I mean, maybe it's one of those things where, you know, in some cases it has to go to, you know, I'd say international, just to get the whole thing resolved, because overseas, I don't know about General. I don't know how well, you know, the General's Cohibas do overseas. I imagine they'd be pissed poor.
Terrible. Yeah, they probably. $18 for that crap? No, thank you.
Yeah, no thanks. so maybe they say, listen, we'll keep you in the United States. That's it. Everywhere else, the other Cohiba. But if I was General, why even bother?
Yeah, they should be. If I was General right now, I would be trying to think of a way to get around that now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it doesn't help when the Supreme Court tells them, no, we're not going to talk about it with you, sorry. So.
Yeah.
But that's for another day. So we talked about General, we talked about big ring gauges. Anything else that we wanted to talk about?
As far as news now, I mean, we've got all the new ELs that we're knocking out here soon. We're definitely working with some international sponsors to try and get some more regionals and different stuff that we can bring to the show to expand our audience. And it was really interesting looking at the audience and seeing, like, like, we have a following in the Ukraine. Why the hell do people in the Ukraine follow us? Like, that's hilarious, dude. That blew my mind.
Eastern European following. We got, you know, we've got some French. You know, Guy, I think, got the whole country watching us.
Oh, you know what? Hold on.
I'm holding.
I need you to bow your head right now. I need you to bow your head with me. We're going to have a moment of silence for Guy. And that, my friends, was for the discontinuation of the Quiet Dorsey Imperialis, which I'm sure you are totally stoked about.
That's the other. I was going to talk about that. You know, it's. But I saw. I saw that they kept the Corona size for you.
They did. What's hilarious is how many people wigged out when they saw that the Imperialis were gone, and then all of a sudden they were gone from the market. Like, everybody just thought about, you know.
Gone.
I mean, it was like 24 hours within that being announced that Imperialis just disappeared, gone.
Yeah. It's I mean, I was never a big fan of the size. I don't care, but I imagine that there were some that were pretty pissed off about it. But, you know, there was a lot of guys when, you know, the smaller ring gauge Partaguses were cut, those sizes, that there was a lot of guys who were very unhappy with that. But, you know, I have to say, Habanos, listen, they're smart. If it's not selling, let's just...
They should replace it with a Petit Robusto or a Grand Corona or a Corona Gorda or something along those lines, because I'm telling you, man, that the Corona's Claro, and I know you haven't had it, the Corona's Claro kicks ass. It is so good. Blows my mind how good that thing is.
Port Larranaga added the Picadores, which is, you know, it's interesting you're adding that. No, I haven't had one yet. But, you know, you add a larger ring gauge to that brand, so obviously the brand does well, and I think probably, you know, distributors were saying, hey, man, we want a bigger ring gauge in this brand.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a following behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets plenty of regionals. I know it does very well in Asia. In that sense, so I mean,
Poor Larranaga cracks me up because I hate that brand, and all of the regionals are amazing. The regionals are freaking believable. They're incredible. Blows my mind. The Legendarios was just like amazing, and even though it wasn't my flavor profile, I still had to bow down to how amazing Legendarios was. It was fantastic, and the Encantos are smoking great.
I love the Petit Coronas. I think it's the best Petit Corona.
Well, we are going to do. I am going to do the Secretos here soon, which is the Minuto size from España, 2013. So that should be. That's really interesting because I've heard really, really, really good things about those. That's one size that is selling out fast, and it was from 2013, and it just hit recently, and now it's like gone. They're selling like wildfire.
How do you think the Magnum 56s are going to be received?
I don't know. I don't know because Upman fans are picky.
That was a dark wrapper on that one I saw.
It depends upon the blend. I'm sure it'll sell well at first, and if people will want to try it out initially, and if it's a good blend, then it'll stand. 2013, they saw the EL Romeo that was 55 ring gauge that I have a review coming on here any day now. And, those larger sizes, I mean, they did it with the RYJ last year. They're doing it with, Upman, well, in 2013, and they're doing it with Cohiba this year, and then obviously in 2015 they're doing it with Upman, and so the reality is those sizes in the EL are at least doing well enough that they keep releasing them and keep getting bigger, so who knows,
They do, and they always throw one in there, I think, for the loyal Habanos fans, and they did it with Ramon Iones, and I think this year, and I think the reason they do that is just because, you already have the Special Select and the Double Coronas, which are big sizes, throw a smaller one out. And the guys go nuts over them.
The reality is, this is a fashion statement, the Cohiba band.
Oh, it's
so
true.
When somebody is smoking a Robusto Supremo, they're going to post a picture of them smoking it because it's a fashion statement. Upman as a whole as a brand is not a fashion statement. It's a connoisseur's brand. They across the board, Upman makes great cigars in every size they make. I mean, every kind of size category. I'm not saying every cigar Upman makes is great, but like the Magnum 50 is a nice strong Toro. The Magnum 46 is an amazing Corona Gorda. The number two is amazing. Their PC is amazing. The Sir Winston is legendary. They're cheap stuff. The Majestics are great. The Minors and the Majors and the what's the other? What's another one for like $75 a box? It's great. Everything they do is good. The 58, the or the Magnum 48, that was a freaking fantastic little petite Robusto. You know? So yeah, who knows?
I know a lot of guys who are big fans of that, the Magnum 48. So it's, you know,
it took a while to awaken. But when it awoke, it was like, oh, wow, this is good. This is really good.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think this is an interesting time for Habanos in general, just because there's a lot of transitioning, and I think for a long time everyone was really excited about the potential of the American market opening up, and now that it's here, it's interesting to see how everyone's feeling, what everyone's thoughts are, hesitations, excitement. So I think there's a lot of factors that go into it too.
And on the opposite spectrum, you have Half Corona, the Vagueros. I mean, one of our most read reviews, top five most read reviews, is the Vagueros Manganitas.
People are fascinated with it. They're fascinated.
The little teeny tiny Bellicoso, you know. That surprised the heck out of me that one did so well. Then you see the D6 that just came out, the Vigia or Vagina, or whatever we call it, from Trinidad.
I do want to call the Trinidad Vagina. I do really want to call it Vagina.
I know. You need to review that one, because I'll probably think it sucks.
Yeah, because no one else is going to touch the Trinidad, so I will.
Oh, people love them. They've gotten really great reviews so far. So there's definitely been plenty of aficionados who have spoke highly of it, who have gotten their hands on it. So I'm sure it'll be a good smoke, just not my cup of tea. But they're doing a lot of these RE releases are all petite Robustos, 4x50s, 4x52s, 4.5x50s, 4.5x52s. These little smaller Robustos, really. Interesting how many small, it's like they're going for small short smokes and big fat ring gauges, and that's what they're going for. Nothing in between.
Yeah, it's interesting, and you know, I always go back to the H. Upman Half Corona as being a benchmark, you know, is that turning point for a lot of these releases, and the fact that people are saying, wow, man, this is a great short smoke, tons of flavors.
And there's really a Monty version coming out too.
Yeah. So it's just people want it. I mean, you know, you have the D4, then you go smaller with the D5. Now they're going smaller with the D6. It's a continuous pattern, and I think you're going to start seeing it with a lot of these brands. And you know, I love that H. Upman, as you said, it's not a lifestyle. It's nowhere near the Cohiba, but it's a brand that really, man, ever since they moved it up in 2007 to a global brand, it's made a difference, and they've been playing around with it.
If you look at the global brands, that's the connoisseur brand.
Oh, yeah. You know,
that really is the connoisseur brand. The Connier has been very well received. The Sir Winston is so legendary, and just everything from Upman is so yes. Like, if you're smoking an aged Upman, it doesn't get much better than that. You know, it's on the par with the aged Monte Cristo and aged Cohiba. It is. And the reality is that's how good they are, you know. And so from that perspective, I just don't see the 56 doing as well because the lack of a fashion statement. So the guys that are going to go after it are really going to be looking to see, does it line up to the Connier? Does it line up to the Sir Winston? Does it live up to those benchmarks that have already been set by the H. Upman brand? Whereas the EL14 Robusto Supremos has nothing to do with Cohiba. It doesn't taste like a Cohiba at all.
Yeah.
It's not blended like a Cohiba at all. It just has the band on it.
It just has that Cohiba band and that Limitada band, which just, man, gets people going crazy. So it's you always got to have one that takes center stage, and that's definitely the release. Whether it's the best one or not, we will find out. We will talk about it.
Absolutely. But. So that being said, since we're talking about the international market, I mean, we've been doing some research and trying to see what's out there, and and looking and seeing what countries are listening. Canada, Ukraine. We do have a significant amount of European listeners and viewers and readers, and same
Australia.
With the Aussies as well. And so we picked up a little bump for you guys. Anybody who's been on our page recently, if you go to www.habanoscritic.com, you will see in the upper left-hand corner, as long as you're not on a mobile phone, if you're on a mobile browser, you won't see it, but you will see an international sponsor that has decided to give us a little bump. They're called iHabanos. They're a worldwide distributor of Habanos, and they deliver anywhere in the world. So anybody out there who is in our international viewership from Canada or the Ukraine or whatever.
Australia. You got those taxes in Australia. I have Habanos.
Yeah, and check them out. I mean, go on the link, check them out. Like I said, for anybody who doesn't live in the United States, our international viewers and listeners, we wanted to work with some of these sponsors that are out there to kind of connect to those people. This is the first guy that kind of we reached out to and reached out to us, and he just popped off an email to his customers that featured Seth's recent review of the Royal Robusto, which was really cool. It was very, very cool. So
he's got a deal on it for those international the international customers. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we did our research and we do know he is completely legitimate. Everything, you know, he sells the real deal. And as Catfish said, worldwide delivery.
Worldwide delivery for all of our international listeners and readers. That want to check out his stocks, see what he's got, and get some legitimate Habanos. Definitely look them up when you're on our site. You can click the link on the upper left-hand corner, like I said. It'll take you right there and show you what he's got. And he's got some good sales going on for all you folks out there who want to check him out. And I can't recommend him enough.
He talked about the Bahiques. He's got a special on Bahiques.
He's got a special on Bahiques, a special on the Royal Robustos, which is really cool. I wish the timing would have been better so we could have done our LCDH show, because I think that's what we're going to do. We may do our next show on it. I don't know. But I just recently did the Hoyo, and you just recently did the Royal Robusto, so we kind of figured we'd do a show on it.
Yeah, he's even got a special on the Sancho Panza, which Catfish gave me shit for.
Suck. My buddy Jeff loves them too, dude. It's so hilarious. So is anything that you like, he's like, hey, do you think I like this? And I think, did Seth like that? Yeah, he did. You should buy that, bro.
Here you go. Let's smoke this.
You know? No, seriously, and he will. And it's so hilarious because there's stuff that I don't like. I mean, there's some cigars I'm not going to mention, but there's some cigars that I've smoked, and I'm like, oh, God, I can't smoke this. This is terrible. I'm like, and I give them to him. I give them to Jeff. And he smokes. He's like, "Oh my God, this is fantastic! Where did you get this from?" I'm like, "Yeah," and I don't mean that he doesn't like good cigars by any means. We just have very differing palates, but we like the same kind of stuff, you know, to a degree. And so it's just kind of funny how that works out.
Oh, and what embargo shirts? They're coming.
Yes, we're looking at shirts and we're looking at some swag for you guys.
Custom condoms too. Habanos.
Custom condoms. Habanos Critic condoms. When you're nailing your old lady, you can not impregnate her with your Cuban tobacco sperm.
You got the nice little Habanos Critic logo on the package right there. We're working on it because everyone else does stickers. We're not doing stickers. We wanted to take it one step further and do condoms.
Yeah. We may do some cigar stands too. Hint, hint. Daniel Reyes, if you're listening. We'll see.
We're dabbling into a bunch of stuff. But absolutely. that's our 1 hour segment. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. I hope you enjoyed our talk on the Cohiba. Next time we'll come back. We're still working it out, but I think we'll be talking and debating over the Limitadas from 2014. As we said earlier, for all of our international viewers, check out iHabanos.com, www.ihabanos.com.
And check us out, HabanosCritic.com.
And we're gonna do some regional shootouts too, where we can like, you know.
Oh yeah, we got some regional stuff in the queue as well.
Germany versus Spain, you know, or Great Britain versus Lebanon, or whatever we can do, or Asia.
The Netherlands versus Spain. We're going all over the place.
Yeah, we're gonna start some international warfare between regional releases. Hopefully, it depends. We have to go travel to these regions, you know, and go surfing and whatnot. And pick up some cigars while we're there.
We're not surfing in the Netherlands, but we'll we'll do something in the Netherlands. Oh wait, you can smoke pot in the Netherlands, can't we?
Yeah, you can smoke enough pot over there that you'll probably be surfing. We'll be flying. So excellent. So that wraps up number our Jordan show, right? Number 23.
Episode.
We're done with Jordan show.
23. One embargo.
Next show is our Kobe show.
Kobe Bryant show.